I should thank the organizers for putting all this together. I only caught the last day of it, so if I say things that have been discussed in the previous days, I apologize. This is a work that happens in the Hardware Innovation Lab at 1Qubit, and these are the people who did the experiments I will talk about today, but more people have contributed to the work. I probably don't talk for 40 minutes, so please stop me if you see something needs more explanation as I go along. Okay, so our goal is quantum computation, and specifically doing simulations of quantum mechanics using quantum computation. And reasons for believing that's a good path of using quantum computers is that these were some of the first applications that were explored using quantum computers, both theoretically and practically using numerical simulations. So Seth Lloyd, for example, showed that you can take a number of local gates and call them a universal gate set if they can simulate every unitary, and also showing that this actually in practice can simulate quantum chemistry problems. For example, finding stable states of molecules was done with Alan Aspergutzik and co-authors. Okay, so in particular, we think of quantum computation as, you either have some control over the device. It could be very limited, so it could be an application-specific device. In that case, you have things like an annealer or something that only does adiabatic quantum computation, or it could be something that can do more broad, it's more broadly programmable. For example, you can do NISQ algorithms, variational quantum Eigel-Sauer variational algorithms, and so on. But when we talk about the complexity of simulating different many-body physics problems, then you come up with this type of diagram that people draw. So NP hard problems are things that usually in classical optimization are the things we want to solve. It's challenging to do them. We usually use heuristics. And MA is Merlin Arthur games. And this is contained into what is called Arthur Merlin games. So here you have an evidence and you want to verify it efficiently. So it's so in fact quantum Merlin Arthur games are a quantum variant of MP problems. You have a state, you want to check that it satisfies something. So for example, it's the ground state of some Hamiltonian. Now there is things that are called stochastic Hamiltonians, and they kind of made their own class because it was shown that it's in the intersection of QMA and MA and AM. So if we know that these two classes are not the same, then these are strictly easier than quantum Merlin Arthur games. So example of problems, so KSAT is NP complete problem. It was shown by Bravi, DiVincenzo, Oliveira, and Terral that K-local Hamiltonian, simulation of K-local Hamiltonians, if the Hamiltonian is stochastic, these are in this intersection class. But K-local Hamiltonian in general is QMA complete. So the proof of this type of theorem, these are techniques that are used to show that universal quantum computation is equivalent to adiabatic quantum computation are used often in, there's something called clock construction that appears a lot. And what is different when you go from here to here is that you have like a universal gate set here, but you show that, if you have stochastic Hamiltonians, then you use like what are called stochastic gates. For example, X rotation, Toffoli gates, and C0 would together be all what you need to be able to simulate K-local stochastic Hamiltonians. Now, this is the theory side. On the numerical experiment, so there was this famous paper from Google that once they had access to D-Wave, they showed they started simulating certain Hamiltonians using quantum Monte Carlo simulations and simulated annealing. And so the positive result for this is that SA is way worse than quantum Monte Carlo simulations for simulating these Hamiltonians. But at the same time, quantum Monte Carlo simulation, at least the variant they were using, is scaling the same as the quantum annealer that D-Wave had made. And so in a way, this is a negative result for getting an exponential, for example, speed up or scaling advantage from making it an annealer that only has a stochastic capabilities. Okay, so there are certain programs that are trying to make these things that are called non-stochastic annealers, or like annealers that have a driving Hamiltonian that can simulate non-stochastic terms. So this is a very recent paper by D-Wave there, and this is a paper that surveys some of the work that is happening in the QEO program. They have different types of qubits, and they do different, slightly different things. But you know, one of the goals is to create more capable prototypes of these application-specific quantum devices. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So what the hardest problem that, you know, D-Wave solves, assuming that it's perfect and there's no connectivity problems and things like that, would fit into the stochastic MA.
And where do you think
simulated annealing would probably be like a good option as a heuristic to solve classical KSAT problems. Oh, no, these are all open, actually. Yeah, so the type of results that are known is, you know, if this class is the same as even this class, then like polynomial hierarchy would collapse to a certain level. And, you know, computer scientists believe that these are all separate levels. So unless something, you know, very contrary to our intuition happens, then these classes should be different. Yeah, that's true. And one reason for, I mean, that's a very hard problem because on top of this theoretical framework, both of them are heuristics. So for example, you know, you're getting solution up to some approximation, you're getting that approximation up to some probability. So it's way more complicated than that theoretical picture, actually. That's true, yes. Yeah. So it's only Monte Carlo simulation with a thermal schedule. Perfect. So yes, there's a question.
Can I ask where systems that have achieved quantum supremacy would fit into this picture? Excuse the horrible jargon. Because there are difficulty results from people like Scott Aronson and collaborators for boson sampling where they show that these distributions are actually hard to sample classically. So yes. Where would they fit into the hierarchy that you had up on the last slide?
So boson sampling, if I remember correctly, is in the QM. I think boson sampling is QMA complete, yes.
Right, because the previous person was asking about, do we actually have any rigorous separation results between the classes?
Yeah, I think that these are like, you know, the type of things we know is that if they were similar classes, then, you know, so for example, MP is equal to P over poly, something like that. Okay. So we kind of think that it's unlikely that they are the same. Cool. So I want to now talk about like what are the reasons that, you know, people are spending money on making non-stochastic annealers. So one of the works that, you know, actually this is a series of papers, but I'm only citing a 2017 paper from Nishimori's group. And what they were looking at was, so this is called the P-spin model. And so you have like interacting sigma z's over spin sites, and you take every p of them, and you let those p interact with each other. So you have n sites, and then you have interacting. You make p local terms here. So if I only use this term and like a summation of sigma x's, then I get that stochastic annealer, so this term and this term. But I would add some other term that would create XX couplers with plus and negative signs. And if I add this term, then I can get something that during this, you know, this is a time-dependent Hamiltonian, depending on time schedule for S and lambda. And as you vary this Hamiltonian, and if you start from ground state of, say, this Hamiltonian, then you will be, you know, you can solve this problem and find the ground state for this one. But, you know, as you do this, for example, if S is always zero, then this term doesn't show up. If lambda is one, this term doesn't show up, this term shows up, and this term shows up. And you get like a stochastic evolution that, you know, you still have adiabatic theorem, but every instantaneous Hamiltonian is stochastic. And when we say like a non-stochastic annealer, we mean that the instantaneous Hamiltonians that show up are non-stochastic. So what I just talked about means that I take lambda equal one and I go in this, so I draw a phase diagram depending on lambda and S, and then I go from this corner all the way up to here. That would be my stochastic simulation. And if I do other things, like, I don't know, start from here and then end up here, then when I end up in this corner, these two terms have gone away. I only have this problem that I want to solve. But during this process, I have also you know, come with instantaneous non-stochastic Hamiltonians. So what this paper shows is that you know, there's a phase transition between the quantum paramagnetic phase and the ferromagnetic phase. And the phase transition on this phase diagram, and this 2D phase diagram, has different natures in the infinite limit of you know, infinite sides. In this line is showing a first order phase transition between these two phases, and then there is a point where the first order phase transition stops, and you start having only second order phase transitions. So if we want to, you know, efficiently solve this problem, there are other works of also Nishimura's group that show that you want to avoid the first order phase transition so that you don't get sort of stuck in bad states. So in fact, like if I start from here, in this infinite limit, I have to go like maybe this way instead of going this way. This is not the same picture in the, you know, in the, if you have finite effects, then actually you see like a sharper phase transition in this region, and you see a smoother phase transition in this region, which I will come back to in numerical experiments. So you can actually, this is, you know, eventually this is just a ferromagnet. You can actually slightly generalize this, and this is done in the same paper, to what's called Hopfield model. And in the Hopfield model, you also have, you know, a ground state you want to retrieve. And all what you do is that you, you know, end up going from this quantum paramagnetic phase to what's called the retrieval phase. And to go there, if, you know, if your number of spins are larger than, say, 80, you actually have to, you know, it's more efficient to go this way because your gap closure in the second order phase transition is closing polynomially fast. But in this region that is the first order phase transition, your gap is closing exponentially fast. In the small number of spins, this is a better region to cross because the phase transition is smoother, as I will show. So that was sort of like the good news, because it shows that, you know, if we could do these stochastic terms or have our trajectory path through non-stochastic Hamiltonians, then maybe we can solve problems that we couldn't solve with stochastic annealing. All right, so now the bad news is that, you know, if you're trying to solve this as a solver for different many-body problems, then you wouldn't know, like you can't do that analytic study for every problem you want to solve. So this other paper from Leila Hormozi and co-authors study like randomly generated instances. So it's essentially the same Hamiltonian that I talked about. This is that transverse field that you start from. This is the problem Hamiltonian that you find the you want the ground state for. And then there's some intermediate Hamiltonian. And then in that paper, they chose like, you know, have XX coupling, but, you know, only with negative sign that keeps it being stochastic. But if you have the XX coupling with the plus sign, then or like with a mixed sign, then you can create non-stochastic current. Now, these are kind of the results that they had, and it shows that actually sticking to the ferromagnetic case boosts the performance in more instances. The number of instances that you end up solving better if you add the non-stochastic terms are very few, like in like the 2-3% of the instances they were studying, they actually saw an improved solution when they were doing, so these are all exact diagonalization, I guess. So basically the results are saying that, you know, for the stochastic XX interactions, you can boost the performance in a large number of instances when you add that term. But the instances you get boost in performance are actually easy for the vanilla stochastic annealing as well. So you boost lots of problems, but those are actually easy problems that you boost. And then in the non-stochastic case, the number of problems you end up getting improvement over are very, very small, 2-3% of them. Those are very, very hard problems for stochastic annealing. Okay, so it means that, you know, you're looking for, you're trying to solve a problem without knowing what it is, but it's only like 1% of the times that you want to use something way fancier than the stochastic annealing. So that's depressing. All right, so what we want to do is to solve this problem. So we want to think of this as a quantum, as an optimal control problem. And we want to go, use optimal control methods, specifically machine learning, particularly reinforcement learning, and try to solve this problem, find the right trajectory for given instances. So what we do want to do is, you know, think of this problem of finding this trajectory as a temporal problem, and then solve it using reinforcement learning. And while doing this, seeing how much generalization we can get from the method we generate. So obviously I talked about the quantum annealing and non-stochastic QA applications, but you can think of doing this, you know, find the right trajectory, for example, for just the temperature schedule of thermal annealing as well. You can also think about, you know, what you have to, like if you have control over gates, then QAOA, variational eigensolver, and, you know, all these NISQ variational methods also fall into this. And, you know, also error correction if you're thinking about, you know, not having a table of syndrome data recovery, but, you know, you want to guess the correct recovery from a given set of syndrome data, especially in presence of non-well-behaving noise, then that's also fitting into this framework of the problem we want to solve. So what I don't want to do is I don't want to think of RL as a black box optimizer, and I don't want to use it as, you know, you can do variational algorithms and NISQ algorithms using RL as well, but you're basically using RL as an optimizer there. It's okay, it probably works, but RL is extremely sample inefficient, so it's probably not the best use of reinforcement learning. Okay, so I come back to that p-spin model. These are for a very small number of qubits where we can, you know, do exact diagonalization for. So this is 6 qubits, and then this is going to be 10 qubits. And as you see, so the phase transitions are happening around here. This column is the gap. The gap is opening, you know, where the problem Hamiltonian becomes stronger, but before that it's not strong at all, and that's what makes the problem hard. These are the order parameters, and you see that, you know, it's kind of opposite of what we had in the inflate limit. So here you have sharper phase transitions in the order parameter, and here you have smoother transitions. So in these cases, what I have to learn is not to go like this way, not to go straight, but kind of go this way to avoid the sharp phase transitions. Okay, so it's bad colors. But so as you see, instead of going directly like this, like trying to pass this phase boundary fast, what RL figured out to do is to slow down in this region and get to this area where it can do a smoother phase transition. And then these are, so the blue curve is the energy of the states that RL is generating. The orange is the ground state, and green is the first excited state. And you can see that, you know, this let it learn not to, you know, this is kind of like one, the avoided crossing that was happening here, it learned to not do this Lando transition over here. In this case, what are the axes? Oh, these ones. Oh, the colors. So this is the heat diagram of the gap, of the minimum, of the gap between the first the ground state and the first excited state. So it's a fixed problem here. Okay, I have only I fixed the Hamiltonian, so I'm not talking about the scaling yet. But you know, in this model, in the p-spin model, you have an exponentially fast closing gap here, and then you have a polynomially closing gap here. So in the 10 spin case, it learns something even more interesting. It does this like swirling and then going to the problem Hamiltonian. And as you see, it did do the transition to the excited state, but also used another place to come back to the ground state. So this is a very non-trivial schedule. Like, you know, you think about linear schedules and inverse linear schedules and exponential schedules. And, you know, you probably, if you start engineering parameters, you don't come up with such schedules. And that's the point. We want to find these non-trivial control parameters. Okay, so now we want to push this method as much as we can. But as we do that, we probably can't continue with the p-spin model. First of all, it's easy. Secondly, you know, we can't actually simulate them. So we're going to go to thermal annealing, and then I want to be able to schedule the thermal fluctuations over time to just do Monte Carlo simulation of many-body physics. And I want to, you know, start with intentionally start with problems that are hard for SA for simulated annealing, and improve the performance of simulated annealing if the schedule of temperatures was given by reinforcement learning. So there's a class of problems called weak strong cluster models, where you have two clusters of spins. They are highly coupled to each other, and then the two clusters are very weakly coupled to each other. And what you do is that what this does is it creates a local minimum and a global minimum that are very far from each other. So you have to do like a cluster of spin flips to get from this local minimum with very similar energy to the actual ground state. So the energy levels are very close, but in the landscape, like in Hamming distance, they're actually very far. Okay, so this is some results of trying different types of Monte Carlo simulations on them. This is actually the result that Google was doing. So this is the quantum Monte Carlo simulation. This line is simulated annealing. And these are other solvers that, you know, in scaling, they're also, essentially, they're doing quantum Monte Carlo simulation, but they have better prefactors. But what this diagram obviously shows is that it's a very hard problem for SA because it's like a high barrier but also very wide, and it has to do a lot of it. SA has to do a lot of upward moves before it goes to the correct well to anneal. Okay, so this is what we're seeing here. So these are all. These are the histogram of all the energy levels that can show up, and they're kind of Gaussian over zero energy. The local minimum is this, like, you know, all spins up, for example. But the global minimum is like spins up for one cluster and spins down for the other cluster, and you see that, you know, they're both on this tail of this spectrum of energy. Nevertheless, it's really hard to go from this one to this one because you have to like take one of the clusters and sort of do a quantum tunneling on that cluster so that you get all spins aligned. Okay, so the way we do reinforcement learning on this problem is that we need a population of trials all happening at the same time. And so each of these lines are showing like a flattened vector of all the qubits. And so these are already affected by the local bias when we start. We start from the local minimum, and then we want to see if simulated annealing can hit the global minimum if we let it run for a long time. So the global, these are like 64 trials. And if all the 64 trials were succeeding, then this whole diagram should be all dark blue. All the spins of all trials have to be aligned. Okay, so the way we do reinforcement learning on this problem is that we want to find a policy for changing temperature. So the thing that I have control over is not the value of the temperature, but how I'm shifting it up or shifting it down. So that's a continuous optimal control problem. And the neural network has to, store this policy and find a better policy for the problem. So the trick for making that neural network be, extract correct features from all these trials, which all credit is due to Kyle for figuring this out, is that we have two convolutional layers here. And one of the convolutional layers is sweeping with kernel on the spin axis, and one of them is doing it with kernels in the repetition in the number of trials axis, and then you stride in the same direction. Okay, so and we can and potentially this could be done, like if this was quantum annealing, then this means like run many of these, take statistics, and then from that statistics update your reinforcement learning agent, and then come back. All right. So let's see what happens if I just choose this. So this is like, if you don't do anything, if you choose random schedules, then very soon you get stuck. You don't see that much improvement. You have a lot of, white areas here. But just a linear schedule in beta, which is inversely linear in temperature, that's actually not a bad policy. Which is something that people usually set for SA. And you see that it starts getting ordered slowly, but it is not completely successful. So we want to see what is the success rate of quantum of Monte Carlo simulation and see if we can improve that. And there are two things you have to schedule here, which are like the initial and final beta for this linear scheduling beta. And the best ones you find are not more performant than only working about 65% of time. So obviously, if you choose bad regimes, you're like, really bad results, but you can't improve it more than 65% if you were just trying to tune the initial temperature and final temperature. Okay, so one problem is that now I'm trying to cook up a optimal control problem. So I need this reward structure. So first of all, I shouldn't assume that I know the ground state. I should try to just make the states that I see in the end become better and better. That means lower energy. And that's one way of structuring the reward. The problem with that is that it's a very sparse reward signal. There's no rewards for whatever action you decide in the middle, and then you only get rewarded in the end, which is in the spirit of dynamic programming problems, and we will test whether it works, but really what we want to see if we can do for a scalable method is whether we can engineer rewards in the middle as well. So I come back to this problem later as well. So we see that, so this buffer is the buffer of the policy gradient method we were using. And the number of steps is the number of places where we let the RL agent interact with the environment. So there are 10 places where the agent can decide to change the parameters. And that will be like a dynamic programming problem where if you start backtracking with, you know, actually vanilla dynamic programming, you only have to backtrack 10 times. So this should make it a little easier than scheduling over a continuous time axis. So you see like a good performance here, but you know, as you increase it, you also get to a smoother schedules over temperature. And you know, this is an instance where, you know, if you didn't like find a good good temperature to start from, then if you have the optimal policy, it shouldn't matter because it will have to realize that it is in the incorrect temperature and like heat up the system and then start cooling down afterwards. And that's the behavior we see here. So this is supposed to be a comparison diagram, but it's almost ridiculous because reinforcement learning is this one, and those are SA. And the whole point is that it didn't anymore matter what initial temperature you start from, because if you start from a wrong temperature, it will heat up the system and then start cooling down afterwards. And that's why you don't see any change in the performance over the initial temperature chosen. So here, you have an almost inverse linear schedule in temperature. If you're in these bad regimes, what I said will happen, you will heat up and then start doing that inverse linear temperature. Okay, so this is not going to work for quantum annealers or any quantum computation because I assumed that I can swipe over states as the calculation was happening, but I don't have access to the states in an actual quantum experiment. So really what we can do is you have a computation and all your measurements are in the end. What we really want to have to get a dense reward signal to be able to make a more sample efficient reinforcement learning agent is to be able to do some sort of measurements mid computation and use those as a way to structure rewards. But this is what we do in quantum error correction as well, right? Except that quantum error correction has this, you know, the syndromes have, there's a way to compute what you have to do next given the syndrome that you measure. So what can we do, like, if we had this application-specific nanostochastic annealer, we can extract syndrome data from it. But what we can do is, instead of, like, having, so I still have to create a temporal control problem, and that means that I have to have rewards that are, you know, in, like, the second epoch of decisions be happening after the state of the environment came from the first types of measurements, but I only care about statistics of these things. So what I will do is that I will do this measurements here. I will measure the system completely here. I can't continue this computation anymore, but I can come back and restart and then do computations all the way to here and pretend that these were happening, these statistics were happening after these ones, if I didn't change the policy that I was using. So I restart and then consume the state and then restart and then consume the state later. And so this works, but you see that it's like it's obviously not as good as the previous case, but it still works because you know as it, whatever policy I have really only depends on the statistics of the spin. Okay, so and this will show you that really the policy we have is stochastic. We didn't really end up with a deterministic policy, even though we were using one Hamiltonian. All right, so the performance is not as good, but it's still pretty good. It's slowly decreasing over bad choices of initial temperature, but it's still pretty stable and way better than SA. Okay, so now, so I don't want to fix a problem, train reinforcement learning for like 3 nights and then come back and give you the answer. What I want to do is to have a reinforcement learning agent that training it is part of programming the solver. So I want to do it one time, put it in the control unit of the quantum device, and then be done with that. And whatever problem instance from the class of problems you are allowed to submit to the solver get solved by the same neural network, same trained neural network. And so that's pretty ambitious, but it actually kind of works. So we started looking at spin glass models, so toroidal 2D models. The couplers, there's no local feed biases here. The couplers are allowed to be sampled from normal distribution between 0 and standard deviation 0.5. And then if they were before or after minus 1 and 1, then I will truncate them. So we let this run, as I said, like a few nights. And all these are different choices of temperature schedules, like hyperparameter tuned temperature schedules that you get for average success probability of solving the model using thermal annealing. And this is the schedule you get with the same single reinforcement learning agent solving them on average with this much success probability over simulated. So it works, and we're happy. And so I will start. I have 2 more minutes. 5 minutes. 3. Yeah. all right. So concluding remarks. So we want to use reinforcement learning as a control unit of a quantum device, and this will go broadly from quantum annealing to non-stochastic schedules to things that look like QAOA. And NISQ algorithms. In fact, it's actually it makes up for a good classical Monte Carlo simulation. And it can be thought of as a way of doing hyperparameter tuning, but not only tuning, but actually scheduling hyperparameters over time if you have enough control over hyperparameters. And so in future, we will plan to do experiments on prototype devices on this. Use it to do large-scale classical optimization of these hard problems, and use it as a hyperparameter tuning agent for parallel tempering, simulated quantum annealing, simulated annealing quantum Monte Carlo simulation. And so now that I have time, I'll advertise. Oh, and papers appearing soon. These are the first times we're talking about these results. If you're interested and want to get early access to drafts, let us know. And so we are also hiring. So we have over 100 people, and over 45 of them are PhDs. So if you think you're good and you're looking for a graduate internship or postdoc level full-time appointments, let us know. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you for the talk. So at some point you talked about designing a reward that doesn't come at the very end, but is related to the instantaneous action that you take at every step,
yep.
The changing of the control.
Yes.
Can you talk more about the, I'm not sure if I missed that part.
Right, so I showed the, like in the P-spin model, I found a trajectory that was going to the excited state but coming down afterwards. If I want to make enough generalization of the trajectory I choose, I want to always stay over the instantaneous ground state. So to do this, I have to use instantaneous rewards that are coming from information about the state, the wave function in the middle of the computation. And for example, in this case, it would just be the energy, like minus the energy at the instantaneous state would be the reward you get from the middle of computation. But obviously, to calculate that, I have to stop the computation because I will consume all the qubits. So we will take statistics from that, and we'll pretend that that happened before me restarting and then waiting longer and then doing measurements again.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. Could you comment on when to choose or optimization methods and when to choose reinforcement learning? Because from what I understand, reinforcement learning is very difficult to set up.
Yes.
It's a tool you only choose if you have to. It's about very large or very complicated interactions between environments and decisions that the agent takes. And also, it's like usually like a lot of states or decisions you can take. So this is kind of a decision space of like 2 parameters. So I'm actually surprised that it almost feels like it's a really big tool for I understand that the problem structure is complicated, but the state space is so small of decisions, right? You can go up or down and...
Yes, so the things you have control over are have to be few things. So you're scheduling like two things or two continuous parameters or one continuous parameter. That's true. Like that's the best case to use reinforcement learning. But like to the point of, I agree with you that reinforcement learning is like using sledgehammers sometimes to kill a fly. But in this case, what we want to do is not to have to optimize over like every instance of the problem. We want to get one trained agent that has, on average, good policy for all instances.
Oh, so you're looking for generalization, and this is why you need learning and not optimization.
Exactly.
Okay.
I recall you mentioned in the beginning that it's kind of like an optimal control problem.
Sorry, so again.
I mean, you mentioned in the beginning that it's kind of like an optimal control problem.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering if you try any classical optimal control algorithm before.
Yes. So classical optimal control methods would. So this is only reporting on the machine learning stuff, but we try other optimal control methods as well. So for this thing that I was talking about, it's better like. Reinforcement learning was giving us very good numerical results. But in general, you can do other optimal, there are classical methods that basically solve, Bellman optimality criteria, for example. And you could try those, but in this case, we haven't done that.
We have time for one question.
Can you give us a little bit more details about the policy gradient algorithm that you're using to do like continuous actions?
No, but we will in the paper. But it is policy gradient, it's not Q-learning.
One last short question.
Why are you just one
Q? Oh yeah, that's... Yeah, that's the hardest question now. Oh, because you have to start from one good qubit.
All right, let's thank the speaker.
Thank you.